Airline Pilot Guy, Episode 10. For real. Hello there, Captain Jeff here, the Airline Pilot Guy. And as I said, you're listening to The Airline Pilot Guy, episode number 10, broadcasting live from my hotel room in Gulfport, Mississippi. Busy as usual, doing a lot of flying and also making a trip out to California. And I don't want to go into a lot of detail, but my mom suffers from Parkinson's disease, and she's kind of taken a turn for the worse. And her husband Ernie, my stepfather, has been taken ill as well very recently, and he's very sick. And so I had to head out there and visit and kind of see how everything was going, and then back to Atlanta and repack the suitcase and back out on another trip. So, but that's life, right? So I ask you to keep my mom and my stepfather in your prayers, if you don't mind, and me too. Anyway, enough of that. Had a new experience this last week. As many of you know, Acme Airlines has a large fleet of MD-80 series airplanes and a smaller fleet of MD-90 series airplanes. And for the longest time, the MD-90 has been flown out of some of the other Acme pilot bases around the country, but never in Atlanta. And just recently, the airline made the decision to purchase a large number of these MD-90s from various airlines around the world. And I believe we're operating the largest fleet of MD-90s now at Acme. And they decided to go ahead and start flying the equipment out of Atlanta as well as the other bases around the country. So they checked us out on the airplane via some literature, or actually a CD, some CD training that we took. And or looked at, and then also the captains were put into a a 4-hour simulator period, just to kind of go over the differences between the MD-88 series and the MD-90 series. But anyway, that was back in March when I did that, and I think officially we started flying them out of Atlanta in May, perhaps June, I'm not sure. But I have not flown one until this past week. And in fact, I wasn't scheduled to fly it. I signed in for my trip and I pulled up the information about the flight, and I noticed right away that something looked a little bit different on the paperwork. And sure enough, the ship number was not the normal serial number that I was used to seeing. And went out to the airplane, and it was an MD-90. And I'm thinking, well, of course, the first thing I did was ask my co-pilot if he had ever flown the airplane. And he said, yeah, about 3 times or so. So I went, oh, good. You know, because the co-pilots didn't go through the simulator. They just got the CD and that was it. And so it helped to have somebody that has some experience, even though, you know, a little bit of experience, it's better than nothing. So turns out it was no big deal. There are some differences between the airplane that I'm used to flying. But pretty much all the differences are good differences. The engines are different. They are electronically controlled, so there's no cable going directly from the throttle quadrant to the fuel control units on the engines in the back. They are higher bypass fans, or fan jets, so they make a little bit more fan noise, and they behave a little bit differently or respond a little bit differently than a low bypass turbine that the MD-80 series uses. And more power, a little bit longer airplane, carries a few more passengers. And let's see, the thing that really got my attention was the brakes on this airplane are marvelous. The MD-80 brakes are steel brakes, and if they get hot, they kind of get warped and they have a tendency to chatter. So when we're slowing down, you know, it kind of has a tendency to, now it's hard to describe without, you know, sounding silly, but it can kind of shudder to a stop. And you have to really, really gingerly activate the brake pedal on the top of the rudder pedals to, you know, come to a nice smooth stop with the MD-88. With the MD-90, no problem. They use carbon brakes on that, and much smoother. They don't really get overheated like the steel brakes, and much more powerful. I noticed that when we flew from Atlanta to Washington Dulles International, and on landing, I chose to use manual braking instead of the auto brake system. I probably should have used the auto brake system just to kind of get a feel for what the brakes really feel like on a landing rollout. But I put the brakes on as I normally do, and boy, they really grabbed the airplane. In fact, one of the passengers said something about how great the brakes were on this airplane, and I don't think he meant that in a good way. But hey. It was my first time. Of course, you know, that's one of those interesting things about the airline world, especially nowadays. You know, years and years ago, airlines wouldn't dream of putting a pilot in an airplane for the very first time full of passengers. You'd go out, like when I was checked out on the 727, a whole bunch of us, well, I say a whole bunch, about four of us went up with an instructor pilot and no passengers and flew an empty 727 from Atlanta over to Greer, field over in Columbus. No, sorry about that smack. Why can't I think straight? Oh, Greenville, South Carolina, and did touch and goes. We called it a bounce ride, where because a 727 is kind of hard to land, and so we went in there and each had a turn at several landings and touch and goes, just to kind of get a feel for the airplane. So by the time you actually flew an airplane that had passengers in it, you had already actually flown the airplane. Well, simulator technology is such these days that there's no real need or reason to put a pilot in an airplane, the real airplane, without passengers, because the simulators are so good that if you're certified to fly that, you're certified to fly the airplane. Now, is it exactly the same? Nope. But it's close enough. It's not dangerous to fly a real airplane for the first time and land it and all that kind of stuff with passengers on board. So just thought I'd throw that out there for you for those of you out there who don't know that goes on, that flight you're taking, it's possible that the pilot actually at the controls this may be their first time. And it's not something we usually make a PA about, because that would make you nervous. It would make me nervous. Anyway, so applied the brakes for the first time, and they were pretty impressive, and none of that, you know, chattering problem at all with them. Let's see, what else? And pretty much everything else it felt like the MD-80 series airplane that I'm used to flying. Oh, the other thing that was a little bit different for me is that the elevator on the MD-88 is not powered, except for if you're in an extreme situation. And then there is a power hydraulically controlled actuator that kicks in to help you recover from an upset. But otherwise, the normal mode of operation for the elevator, and that's the thing that when you pull back the control stick or the control column or you push it forward, it actually activates a control surface on the tail, and it basically makes the nose of the airplane go up or down. And that's how we climb and descend. Well, on the MD-88, it's connected via a cable to my control column, and it flies a little tab on the very trailing edge of the elevator surface. In turn, that flies the elevator, so it's not a direct hydraulically controlled control surface. And I guess I'm kind of used to that now. The MD-90, because of the extended length of the airplane, they decided to go ahead and make that a powered control surface. So it's a powered, hydraulically powered elevator. And that was a little bit different for me to get the feel for that. I'm not sure I like it, but again, as with most things, when you try something for the first time, you know, you think, well, I don't like it. And then after a while, you get kind of used to it, and then you might actually like it better. So anyway, that was my experience flying the MD-90. Flew it up to Washington, D.C. and back, and had a great time. Oh, you know what? I probably should have started this show with this piece of feedback, because many of you expressed a little bit of confusion about the title of last week's show. Let me play this. This is from Mike in Indiana.
Hi, this is Mike from Indiana. I just got done listening to Airline Pilot Guy episode number 10. And what happened to episode number 9? I went from 8 to 10. So did I miss something? So keep up the good work. Thanks.
No, Mike, you didn't miss anything. I'm missing something. Apparently a bunch of brain cells. That was my mistake, and I apologize for my mistake there. Yeah, I was just seeing if you guys were paying attention. Now, if you listened to the show, which I'm sure you did, I mentioned in there that it was episode number 9, and somewhere doing the show notes, and what I do is on my computer I have a folder with the podcast, and then I have each individual episode, it has its own folder. So I have APG001, APG002. And that's the way I kind of organize the, you know, feedback and sound clips and whatever. And I had one for APG009. And that's the one I recorded. And when I was doing the show notes, I must have seen something that I wanted to talk about in this episode, episode number 10. And so I created a new folder, APG010. And so when I'm doing the show notes, I'm probably looking at that folder thinking, you know, I have 10 on my mind now, and not realizing that I had not recorded it yet. So, yeah, you're not losing your mind out there. It is number 9 that you listened to last week. And this is episode 10, the real episode 10. Now, I wasn't quite sure exactly how to correct all of this, and I hope that this doesn't screw up all the podcast aggregators out there, because what happens when you post your podcast, and most people do it using a WordPress blog, the name of your blog post basically becomes the name of the episode. And so I went back and corrected my post and named it APG009. Oops, appropriately named, I guess. And so I changed it to that, and I'm hoping that that doesn't screw everybody's iTunes directory up and everything else when I put this one out, and it says, oh, I already have APG010. So, gosh, maybe I should have consulted somebody that was an expert in this, but I didn't, and I'm hoping that you're actually listening to this right now. So, anyway, thanks, Mike, for pointing that out, and several other people did, too, via Twitter and Facebook, and I realized right away after getting many, many people saying that there was something wrong, that I must have screwed something up, and sure enough, I did. So I apologize for that, and I hope that everybody now is listening to the real episode number 10. Okay, here's something else. This show, by the way, today is going to be mostly feedback, because I received a whole bunch of great feedback, and it's easier for me. I don't have to find a bunch of stuff to talk about. Not that I really have to worry about it, because I usually see things during the week that really interest me and can't wait to talk about with you. But Adam Morris, 85, he started following me on Twitter, the Airline Pilot Guy. Excuse me, not the, just at Airline Pilot Guy. That's my identity on Twitter. And he sent me a tweet and said, just discovered your podcast. Love it. Did you hear about the bat on the plane today? Fantastic. Google it. And this happened, I don't know, maybe yesterday or a couple days ago, pretty recently. And there was a flight from, it says in the news, a Delta flight from Madison, but I don't believe it was Delta Airlines. I think it was one of their connecting carriers, like Atlantic Southeast Airlines, actually. But anyway, they were departing Madison, Wisconsin to Atlanta, Georgia, And they returned, this again, the news report says was aborted, but we don't usually use that term unless we're talking about a rejected landing or a rejected takeoff, actually. But the flight left, and when they were in the air, it turns out that there was a bat flying around the cabin, and so they returned to Madison to take care of the situation. Here, I have a little clip here that might be fun to listen to. Bats flying around.
Go to the bathroom. Go to the bathroom. Go to the bathroom. Here we go.
Okay. So, you know, you really can't see anything by listening to this podcast. I'll put the little clip or the link to the clip in my show notes. Somebody had a portable camera out, and I'm hoping it was above 10,000 feet. But anyway, their video camera was out and filming this bat flying up and down the aisle of this regional jet. And somebody in the back opened up the door to the bathroom, and the bat flew into the bathroom. They closed the door, and voila, problem solved. I guess the crew, the pilot, decided to go ahead and return to Madison and take care of the winged stowaway. And apparently, I remember reading somewhere else that they tried to find the bat, and it was nowhere to be found, so I have no idea where it went. But and some may be wondering why or how a bat got into the cabin of an airplane, but apparently at Madison, the terminal is such that it's pretty high-ceilinged, and it's not unusual for birds and bats and stuff like that to somehow get in to the terminal. And of course, it just flew via the jetway right onto the it boarded the airplane, just like the passengers, I guess. So that was exciting. Thank you, Adam Morris, 85, for following me on Twitter and sending me that tweet. And yeah, that was fun. Okay, I'm just back from dinner, and I promised you some feedback. So let's start from some feedback from Dan Felton from the United Kingdom. Hi, Jeff. I've just caught up with episode 9, the last episode, and the Air France preliminary report is very interesting indeed, and may I thank you for your clear commentary on it. You're welcome. I have a couple questions and opinions of my own. Obviously, the pilot flying in Flight 447 case was the most junior in terms of experience, but surely, with even limited experience, a pilot can recognize a stall condition such as this. I remember in my early days of training, I started in 1992, that power plus attitude equals performance. I don't want to sound like an armchair expert here, and with 20/20 hindsight perspective, it is easy to say this, but this is surely a case of basic flying skills either being forgotten or never learnt in the first place. I'm inclined to suspect that perhaps the flight deck philosophy on Airbus aircraft, as technologically marvelous as it is effectively de-skilling pilots of their most basic handling abilities. I also think, by the sound of things, the flight deck warning enunciation system is probably in need of a redesign to avoid this intermittent stall warning, which, coupled with some sort of sensory disorientation, lead to utter confusion and the breakdown of cockpit cohesion, it seems. My understanding is that when an Airbus aircraft goes into or near a stall, data drawn from the angle of attack, the aircraft goes into a mode called alpha floor, and he also included and attached some links to some websites that have this kind of a graphic of the different modes of autopilot or autoflight in an Airbus aircraft. When the aircraft goes into a mode called alpha floor, the engines spool up in takeoff go-around, which we call toga, automatically. But as the thrust levers are not motorized, the pilot won't have a visual cue that this is happening other than the engine display or ECAM and the inevitable sound of the increase. What the heck was happening on Air France 447? I guess the speed had washed off so much that the air data system had, well, no data, I guess, other than a static source. Is this your take, Jeff? If so, this is surely a fundamental flaw in the design of that system. It sounds as though icing had some part to play. Okay, so I'll stop right here in his feedback. Yes, going back to the previous paragraph talking about something that you learned, and even a pilot with limited experience would be able to recognize a stall condition. I agree, although I think there were some factors in here that kind of masked the situation they were in, and you kind of hinted at it with the intermittent stall warning system. Anyway, the power plus attitude equals performance is something that I learned when I learned to fly in the Air Force, and we called it control performance. You know, you set a specific pitch attitude and a power setting, and it's going to yield a certain performance. So let's say, putting a certain, wings level, the pitch angle zero, and 3,000 pounds per engine should give you, let's say, a 700 foot per minute descent in a 727 on a glide slope. Yes, this is a philosophy that I think that most of us learn early on, but maybe some of the airplanes now we're flying are so advanced and the autoflight automation is so advanced that we're starting to forget, what we're looking for here because the airplane's doing it. You went on in the second paragraph here to talk about the stall warning system. The reason, yes, that the air data system stopped giving any information is because once it falls, the airspeed falls below 60 knots, the computers basically say, okay, this is erroneous data, and I'm not going to do anything with it anymore. I'm not getting any good data, so I'm not going to give you any information. So the stall warning system stops. It doesn't enunciate or warn anymore that you're in a stall. And I believe it doesn't even display airspeeds anymore on the display. It just blanks them out. And then in the situation when they're falling out of the sky and they finally allow the nose of the aircraft to get to the point or fall enough that the angle of attack is resulting in an increase in airspeed, then all of a sudden the airspeed starts indicating more than 60 knots and the computer system says, oh, okay, and now I'm getting valid airspeed, although it's extremely low, and guess what? We're in a stall situation. And so, ironically, every time that they were doing something that would actually recover them from their peril, the stall warning system activated, and they thought, oh, I'm doing the wrong thing, when in fact they were doing the right thing. And so they kept returning to the previous situation. I have another email or some feedback that I'll read that kind of talks about this as well. And he continues, now a question about the MD-88 being a T-tail design. A system was built in to protect from a deep stall. Am I correct? Yes, you are correct, Dan. Why not install a stick pusher on all passenger transport aircraft? That's a good question. I think the engineers at Airbus thought that it was not necessary. But I think we're finding now that a redesign of this system is imperative, and that maybe they're looking at something like this now. Let's see. Last but not least, a personal question about Catholicism. And, of course, he asked me a question about my faith, and I answered that in a personal email. Let's see. Best wishes, Jeff. Thanks for mentioning me on episode 9. I must make one correction. Yeah, when I was reading Dan's feedback in episode 9, the last episode, I kind of realized that I was saying the wrong thing at the time and confusing and mixing up something that he had said, but I had already stopped and started that recording so many times, I thought, oh, what the heck, I'm just going to go with it. So I apologize, Dan, for alluding to the fact that you studied mechanical engineering when, in fact, you have not. And but anyway, basically what he was trying to say there was that his interest in aviation is what, you know, he was doing something else. But when he started concentrating his life on pursuing his flying, everything kind of clicked in place. That's a major a paraphrase, so I'm hoping not messing that up as well. But anyway, thanks, as always, Dan, for your feedback. Very, very interesting. And he also sent me a bunch of links to websites that deal with Airbus automation and also weather, because I had asked my listeners about their favorite weather browsers or the weather applications, whether it be using your internet browser on your desktop machine or your laptop or your smartphone or whatever. So he gave me some links there as well. Okay, and he also, thank you also, Dan, for sending me that PDF of the Air Force officer who did some kind of a paper or thesis on cockpit automation, and I'm looking forward to reading that. I have not had a chance yet, but I do intend to dig into that soon, and I'll let you know what I think about that. So thanks again, Dan. Keep it up. Okay, this piece of feedback from Eric Roeder. Hope I'm pronouncing your name right, Eric. Captain Jeff, love the podcast. I, too, found the Air France accident investigation chilling. From the first read of the transcript months ago, I was amazed nobody keyed in on the reactivation of the stall warning horn until now. The first time I read about it, I thought it would really add to the confusion during recovery. As you know, if you do something and something bad happens, you stop and reverse your actions. I think this assured their demise. The WOW, W-O-W. Now, I'm sorry, Eric, I'm not sure what that stands for. Is that weight on wheels? I'm not sure. Or radar altitude should have been cross-referenced by the flight data computer before warnings and displays were removed from the primary flight display. Lessons learned. At Eagle, and I agree with you, Eric. Anyway, he goes on. He's a pilot at Eagle, a subsidiary or a feeder airline for American Airlines. I think it's owned by American Airlines, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, Eagle, we lost an ATR in icing. This was a few years ago. At one point in the chain of events, the crew raised flaps from the first notch. 15 degrees was allowed in icing at the time. And the situation worsened. But when they tried to put the flaps back to increase the coefficient of lift, the plane wouldn't allow it, since the speed just tripped above flap speed. That flight ended badly, too. That feature has since been removed. Nothing worries me. Yeah, there were the ATR was holding. I think they were en route to Chicago O'Hare or Chicago Midway, one of the Chicago airports. And they were in icing. And interestingly, on that one, again, autoflight was involved because the airplane, you know, was being flown with the autopilot. And as the wings were icing up, the flight characteristics were changing, but it wasn't completely obvious to the aircrew because, again, the autopilot's making adjustments that, unless you're at the controls of the airplane, you're not going to know these adjustments are being made. And in their case, the flight ended badly. Okay, nothing worries me more than a plane thinking it knows better. I know of some situations where aircraft have diverted stable flight at high altitude and were only saved by the crew doing something drastic, like lowering the landing gear at VMO. So anyway, to continue his sentence, when the crew has done something drastic like changing the mathematic equation of aerodynamics, you still need the, quote, Hail Mary in your toolbox if it comes to that, thanks to the Catholic illusion. As for computer software, I've used Wings X, My Pilot Cast, and ForeFlight. And the only one of those that I'm, this is me speaking, the only one of those that I am familiar with is ForeFlight. So I'm going to continue with Eric's feedback. With the latest updates, I pretty much stick to ForeFlight on my iPad with GeoReference and Bad Elf. Eric, I'm assuming that that's a typo. Or maybe not. I just don't know what a bad elf is, so maybe you can send me an email and elaborate. Or better yet, send me some voice feedback. You're a pilot. I'm sure you have a great pilot voice. Anyway, he talks about ForeFlight with his iPad with GeoReference and Bad Elf. Though I do like My Pilot Cast, the ability to bring up winds or icing and use the scroll bar to move through the altitudes to see conditions. I wish they used Jeppesen plates, but you can't have everything. Maybe one day Eagle will go to the electronic flight bag, EFB. So life and my back will be good when I fly general aviation. Yeah, I agree. I think that that's the way we're going. You know, electronic flight bags or tablets to display our approach plates and manuals. Okay, continuing with this feedback. Last, I heard the overrun of the F-16 at Oshkosh was due to a whiteout in the cockpit caused by flash condensation, which impaired the pilot's vision. Not sure how the pressurization system works on an F-16, but that's pretty odd, but would explain why he wasn't on the brakes hard enough. Okay, personally, I find that kind of hard to believe. I think that might be a convenient excuse, maybe, but I don't know. I think that runway was just a little bit shorter than that guy was expecting, and I think he was, I don't know. Who knows? I wasn't there. I can't really speculate, but I find it hard to believe as well that the pressurization system or defogging system on an F-16 isn't good enough to handle some flash condensation. Anyway, and the last thing he says is, take care and glad a Presbyterian pilot has a friendly place to listen to. And then he does one of those wink signs. Eric, ER. Let's see. Dun, dun, dun. He says, excuse the typos, please. I'm doing this on an iPhone with a wife complaining I need to detach from my technology. I know exactly what you mean, Eric. I know exactly what you mean. Okay. Thanks again, Eric, for sending the feedback. And I'm looking forward to hearing more from you. You need to tell me about that bad elf. Let's see. Now, I mentioned, as Eric did and Dan, about weather apps. You know, I look at weather in a couple different ways, like sitting here in front of my laptop. My favorite weather site is Weather Underground, and that's WUNDERGROUND.com. Looks like Wonderground, spelled with a U. And they also make some web tailored apps, or not apps, like it's kind of like a web app. It's, if you go to their website using an iPhone or an Android phone, it senses that and gives you a formatted version of their site that is feels very much like an application. And those are the two that are kind of my go-tos for finding most of what I need when I look at weather. And now when I say that, you know, as a pilot, let me back up. If I'm at home and I'm not flying a trip, when I look at the weather, just seeing what the temperature is going to be and whether it's going to rain or not, that's good enough for me, you know, so I know what to wear and what I can plan for as far as outdoor activities and such. But when I'm flying, I look at a lot of different things like funnel systems and mid-level and upper-level airflow patterns. I look at convective systems, convective outlooks, looking at the weather radar products, normally the Nexrad products. I'm looking at not only the intensity of the storm, but I'm also looking at the tops of the echoes, what they call the echo tops, to see, you know, how high up, how tall that thunderstorm is, how quickly it's moving, you know, the velocity of the storm, etc. I'm kind of taking apart, analyzing a lot of these weather systems because, hey, I got to fly my airplane up there somewhere near it or around it or, you know, not through it usually. We're talking about severe weather here, and you really don't want to fly through severe weather unless you just absolutely have to. So it's understandable that I got a couple recommendations for the Weather Channel app. Again, that's a great app, but it doesn't really provide the kind of information that we as pilots are looking for. Well, I don't think it does. Maybe I should. Honestly, I haven't downloaded it, so maybe I should take a look at it. Lisa Reinhardt, thank you for sending me the feedback. She did that via email, and she said she likes the Weather Channel app. And she's not the only one. I also received some audio feedback from Jen in Northern California. Here, let's listen. She talked about the weather thing, and also the a couple podcasts ago, I talked about the U.S. Air incident. So let's hear from Jen.
Hey, Captain Jeff. It's Jen in Northern California. Responding to the discussion in episode, I think, 8 about the USAPA, the letter, and the pilot that refused to fly over the Atlantic with her electrical systems malfunctioning, I wonder if the U.S. Airways people, who are nicknamed U.S. Scareways by those in the markets in which they live,
Jen,
would like to get in
Jen.
A car with brakes that may or may not be functional and an engine that may or may not be working, and then drive through the Rocky Mountains in the middle of the night. If the answer is no, then they probably should be a lot more considerate of their pilots' decisions to fly or not to fly, because their pilots are the ones who are having to fly the planes, not them. As far as my favorite weather app, I'm a fan of weather.com. For some odd reason, the weather bug is a standard widget in Windows Vista, and it's generally pretty accurate as long as you live in a metropolitan area, and even when it's not, you can find someplace close. I'm finding that I really enjoy it because I can set it for wherever I happen to be, and it gives me pretty accurate weather. Weather.com is another site I look at, and yeah. Anyway, I enjoy your podcast as always. Thanks. God bless. Bye.
Okay. I guess maybe I misunderstood her when I first listened to that. I guess the weather bug is the one she's recommending that comes standard in the iOS. And again, it's one of those that kind of gives you just a general overview of the weather conditions in your city. And weather.com, which I think is the Weather Channel's website, if I'm not mistaken. So thank you for the feedback, Jen. I always appreciate it. And let's see here. Let me move over to... Do I want to talk about... Oh, yeah, Aaron. Aaron Ruhi sent me some feedback to feedback@airlinepilotguy.com. Hello, Captain Jeff. My favorite weather app is My Radar from FlightWise, and that's www.flightwise.com. It's very simple, straightforward, and quick, not full of fancy, useless features found in other weather apps, which makes it a great tool, in my opinion. So, oh, and he said, regards, Aaron. Thanks, Aaron, for your feedback. And I actually went to the iTunes or the App Store, I guess, and checked it out. And I think they have a free version and a paid version. And so, being the cheap airline pilot I am, I checked out the free version that puts a little ad on the bottom, just below the controls or the menu at the bottom. And it's not obtrusive. But I might go ahead and spend I think it's $1.99 or something. It's not very expensive to get rid of those ads because I like it. That was a good suggestion. I've been using it on this trip and I've been comparing it with what I can view, with the Weather Underground product. And while the Weather Underground product is free and it doesn't have any ads in it, not yet anyway, I do like My Radar. It seems to be a little bit quicker when it comes to getting the data and displaying it, especially when you're looking at it in the map view, not the satellite view, where it's not pulling as much data in, and it automatically gives you kind of that loop mode, like 4 or 5 shots of the or frames, and yeah. I really like it. I'm finding I'm using that quite often. So thank you for that suggestion, Aaron, and keep listening and keep sending me feedback. Let's see. The other thing that I looked at my folder on my iPhone, I have a weather folder, and I guess I haven't been looking at it for quite some time. And I took another look at some applications that I had used and downloaded in the past and I haven't been using lately. And one of them is called AeroWeather, AeroWeather. And that one's kind of nice because you can kind of set up, for instance, for this trip, the places that I'm going besides Atlanta are Richmond, Virginia, Gulfport, Mississippi, and Milwaukee. And so I'm going in and out of Atlanta to all those different places. So I just kind of, oh, and the first one was, let's see, Washington, D.C. No, maybe not. Well, anyway, so I basically set up Atlanta, Richmond, Gulfport, and Milwaukee in there. And what it does is it basically gives you a display or a quick and dirty indication of whether the place is VFR, marginal VFR, IFR, etc. It gives you the temperature, wind direction and speed, cloud cover, and it, essentially it takes the METAR information and displays it in a translated version. And if you click on the right side, there's like a little arrow over there. It takes you to a screen that gives you more information, and you can either look at the translated TAF, which is the terminal area forecast information, or you can look at it in the raw TAF display. And it also has other information on there, like sectionals and information about the airport you're going to, et cetera. So it's quite a wealth of information. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's been a while since I downloaded that. I think that was free as well. Anyway, so I'm starting to revisit some of these things. And again, if you're a new listener or you've been listening for a while and you just haven't felt like sending feedback because, I don't know, you know, you have a life, but you're listening to this conversation and thinking, hey, he needs to try out this particular app or go to this website, send in your feedback. I'm always looking for the best tool for my job. So thanks again, everybody, sending your feedback in regard to my question about weather apps. And finally, let's end the show. I hope I haven't forgotten anything. Let me look at here. Yeah, I think I got everything I was supposed to talk about on this show. Some humor. And this is from Kevin E. St. John. And Kevin has sent me feedback in the past, especially when it was the Catholic Pilot Show. And let's see, he says, I couldn't help but smile as I looked at the rules and recalled your description of some of the captains you flew with years ago. As always, enjoyed the latest podcast with the Air France 447 summary, Kevin. Okay, so he attached this graphic, and the title of this looks like a sign that you hang up, and it's entitled Pilot Rules. And here, let me read you some of the pilot rules here. The pilot, and of course, when I'm saying the pilot, it means the guy in charge, the captain. The pilot always makes the rules. The rules are subject to change at any time without prior notification. No co-pilot can possibly know all the rules. If the pilot suspects the co-pilot knows all the rules, he must immediately change some or all of the rules. The pilot is never wrong. If the pilot is wrong, it is due to a misunderstanding which was a direct result of something the co-pilot did or said wrong. The co-pilot must apologize immediately for causing said misunderstanding. The pilot may change his mind at any time. The co-pilot must never change his mind without the express written consent of the pilot. The pilot has every right to be angry or upset at any time. The co-pilot must remain calm and at all times, unless the pilot wants him to be angry and or upset. The co-pilot is expected to The co-pilot is expected to mind read at all times. The pilot is ready when he is ready. The co-pilot must be ready at all times. Any attempt to document the rules could result in bodily harm. The co-pilot who doesn't abide by the rules is grounded. Well, there you have it, a very nice, succinct clarification of the rules, pilot rules. That's very cute. Thank you very much, Kevin, for sending that in. Hey, if you have something that's funny, like a joke or something humor-related, send it to feedback@catholicpilot.com. I'm doing it again. feedback@airlinepilotguy.com. So, yeah, send your feedback to that or dial up the number stayed the same, 304-99-PILOT. That's 304-997-4568. Once again, I prefer voice feedback, so that's area code 304-99-PILOT. And let's see. Facebook, K Captain Jeff or Airline Pilot Guy. Just do a search. You'll find me there. And become a friend. I need friends. On Twitter, Airline Pilot Guy, all one word. And, of course, my website, airlinepilotguy.com. And just before I go here, again, I'm letting you know that things in my life are kind of really, really busy right now. There's also another aspect of my life that I really don't want to share with you, but it involves another activity that I might be involved in that I'm applying for at my church, in addition to, you know, flying airliners and doing these podcasts, which I really enjoy, and also going back and forth out to California to take care of my family. Anyway, so I ask you to be patient with me just in case you don't see a podcast in the, you know, for a week or two. I try to get these things out once a week, and to be honest with you, it's kind of very therapeutic for me. It keeps me involved with the things happening in the news, and it keeps me involved with my community, you guys and girls. And so I'll probably try making every effort to continue to put these things out as often as I can. But if I don't, I'm sure you'll understand. And as always, it's always a beautiful day above the clouds. And until we meet again, wishing you blue skies, unlimited visibility, and tailwinds. Take care and God bless.
That was terrible!
Horrendous!
I'm offended!
I'm appalled!
So what are we gonna do?
What else? Email it to everybody we know!
Good idea.